Good morning, everyone. We're going to open up the Senate Committee on Judiciary, and today we have, looks like, five bills that were scheduled for public hearing, possible work sessions. At this point, we're going to start off and make certain we have no bills or possible introduction of new committee bills.
No, we don't, Mr. Chair.
So we'll go ahead and start with a public hearing on House Bill 2284, and it appears that all of these bills today are going to be ones that have come over from the House. And we'll just take them one by one and figure out if we're going to move forward today or not on work sessions. Council?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
House Bill 2284 is from Legislative Council, and it corrects grammar and punctuation errors in statute, deletes obsolete references, and conforms language to existing statutes and legislative style.
Even though the witness registration has no names, I have this vision.
I have this vision.
Dave Hendricks is going to speak to us. Dave?
Chair members of the committee, Bob Cratchit from Dave Hendricks from Legislative Council's office. I only say that because someone in the audience already said, "Oh, it's the Scrivener's bill," and I said that always makes me feel a little Victorian. As council has indicated, this is non-substantive changes as reflected in Section 1, which indicates that none of these are amendments are intended to alter the legislative purpose of statutory sections affected by these changes. And you'll note the title as well indicates that it's relating to correction of erroneous material in Oregon law. It's not intended to make any changes to what these laws originally did when they were first enacted. You can kind of see there's, as usual, there's quite a extensive list of different statutes where we found problems, and if you ask me on any of them, you'll note that there's a little note that follows each of them that says what they do, and I will probably read that back to you if you ask me about one specifically. And I'd be happy to try to answer any questions you might have.
Dave, thank you. Actually, I wish we were to limit your testimony because my thought was there was only three members here and we were going to vote on which of the other two was going to actually get to carry this bill.
I think Senator Whitsitt, since he's obviously not here.
Well, that's still up for
that debate. We also want to make certain that our more recent members of the committee have an opportunity to share on the floor.
As long as Legislative Council will be there to make sure to explain the bill.
Not on this one. No, this is...
I just like to note, Mr. Chair, that it looks like Legislative Council has done some witch hunting, because I did notice at least they've changed many of the inappropriate witches to that.
Yes.
Witch hunting, I like that. That would be a good course speech.
So,
You're volunteering to carry the bill.
I'd be happy to. I think it's something that even I can understand.
Senator Walker used to have the opportunity to carry these every once in a while, and she would go through there and pretty well find all the little hidden treasures that LC came up with. So we would like to have a full report on that. Is there any questions for Mr. Hendricks? All right, Dave, thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to speak today on House Bill 2284? Not seeing anyone, we'll close the public hearing, and we will open a work session on this bill, because I assume there's no fiscal or revenue impact on this one.
There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Senator Boquist.
Mr. Chair, I move HB 2284 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves HB 2284 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and notes the carrier will be Jackie Dingfelder, the senator.
I will be honored, Mr. Chair.
Is there any discussion regarding the motion? Any objection? So ordered. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Senator Dingfelder.
Do I need to note how many witches are changed to that?
I like the extortion part.
This is actually freestyle. You get to actually choose what you like to note for the body.
I noted that it was carried by Representative Barton on the House floor, so he might have some clever ideas for you.
You might want to look at the tape from the House.
I believe that was his first bill.
Yeah. We're going to go ahead and open up a work session on 2312. Council?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2312 adopts consistent definitions for foreign business entities to assure they include American Indian tribes. This has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Ms. Burford.
Good morning, Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee. My name is Christopher Burford. My address is P.O. Box 638, Pendleton, Oregon, 97801. I'm here today to speak on behalf of the Indian Law Section of the Oregon State Bar in favor of House Bill 2312. You've got voluminous materials on this at this point. It's a fairly modest bill. I'm not aware anyone is in opposition to it. So I'll keep my comments brief. What I'd really like to do is just show you exactly what the bill does. So if you turn to page 2 of your copy of the bill and look at lines 16 through 26, you'll see four definitions for types of business entities that are considered foreign. In addition to this chapter, there are four other chapters of the Oregon Revised Statutes that have definitions of these types, these entities and others that are business entities that are considered foreign. What I'd like to focus on today is the actual terms that are used to define foreignness. Among these five chapters, it's defined five different ways. And what HB 2312 does is adopt a uniform, brief, and accurate definition of foreignness. So if you look at the first one, that's subsection 15, foreign corporation. And just take a look at the current language at the moment. It means a corporation for profit incorporated under a law other than the law of this state. This particular amendment would just make that plural. So we're really, if you look at that, if a corporation is formed in Washington, if it's formed in Canada, if it's a federally created corporation, or if it's created by an American Indian tribe, it's a foreign corporation in the state of Oregon. Now, go down to subsection 17 there, foreign nonprofit corporation. You would think it would be the same, except it's a nonprofit, but it's not. It's a corporation not-for-profit organized under the laws of a state other than this state. So the state of Washington is covered, but if it's France, the federal government, or an American Indian tribe, it's not actually a foreign corporation under the language of the statute. The statute's actually wrong. And in fact, the Legislative Council's office has a policy of applying this, all these different entities are considered foreign corporations. So what this bill would do is bring the language of the statute in line with policy and the actual law of the matter. And what we've done is the Indian Law Section has proposed using this phrase, laws other than the laws of the state, uniformly and to define foreignness in all of these different sections. The other change that was proposed by the Indian Law Section that is incorporated in HB 2312 is a minor change to the definition of entity. It also appears on this page at subsection 14 and in three other chapters of the ORS. All those definitions of entity end with the phrase, any state, the United States, and any foreign government. Those governments are considered entities under this provision of the law. And the only kind of government that's left out are American Indian tribes. So we simply inserted the phrase, a federally recognized Native American or American Indian tribal government in those four definitions. Those were the recommendations of the Indian Law Section. They are incorporated in the bill. There are a number of other amendments to other sections that I believe were proposed by Legislative Council's office. Indian Law Section really isn't going to comment on those. And my only other remark is to note that I've spoken with Peter Threlkell, who's the head of the Corporations Division of the Secretary of State's office. He tells me that the division is in support of this bill and that, in fact, it would bring it in line with current practice. That concludes my comments. I'm happy to take any questions.
Great. Thank you. Any questions? Chris, thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 2312? Not seeing anyone close the public hearing. We're going to go ahead and open a work session on 2312.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2312 to do pass. I'll carry it if you want me to.
All right. We have a motion from Senator Broquist to move House Bill 2312 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Ordered, and some requests will be our carrier. Thank you. We'll now go ahead and open up our next public hearing, and that is going to be on House Bill 2321.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2321 removes Department of Corrections supervision requirement when a person is convicted of criminal mischief involving graffiti, refuses to donate labor. There's no revenue impact. There's a minimal fiscal impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. And Mark? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. My name is Mark Cadott, and I am a community corrections chief for the State of Oregon Department of Corrections, and I'm here this morning to ask for your support to House Bill 2321. What House Bill 2321 does is remove the requirement that certain offenders complete community service under the supervision of the Department of Corrections. Currently, Oregon Revised Statute 137.131 states that a person who is convicted of criminal mischief that resulted in defacing property by creating graffiti must agree to provide community service as a condition of any probationary sentence. That service must include removing graffiti, either graffiti that person created or graffiti for another person or both. If the defendant does not agree to provide that community service, the community service must be served under the supervision of the Department of Corrections. This bill would change current law by deleting Section 3 of Oregon Revised Statutes 137.131, which currently states, if the defendant does not consent to donate labor, as required by Oregon Revised Statute 137.128, the period of community service must be served under the supervision and control of the Department of Corrections. We researched this bill, or this statute, to determine where that language came from. In the minutes from the 1995 Senate Judiciary Committee work session on Senate Bill 343, it was noted that the intent of the committee was to delete the reference to the Department of Corrections in this section. However, that was obviously never done. The primary issue addressed by House Bill 2321 is that the Oregon Department of Corrections is not in the position to supervise offenders, many of whom are sentenced for misdemeanor, who refuse to donate their labor as required by statute. There are a number of other remedies available under statute which allow for the revocation of probation or contempt of court for failure to perform the community service. So once again, the Department of Corrections does support passage of this bill. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
Yes.
Senator Wissa.
Chair Przanski, if the Department of Corrections is not going to supervise the dissenter here, then who will supervise the dissenter?
I mean, Senator,
at the current time, the Department of Correction is charged with supervising the individual in the graffiti removal and so forth. If they dissent to do that, who will supervise it? I mean, you said there you can go to probation, revocation, and other remedies, but I mean, isn't this pushing this responsibility off on the community corrections, perhaps?
Chair Przanski, Senator Whitsitt, that's currently the practice, is that each county has their own work crew and community service programs that operate in this capacity, enforcing community service orders and supervising the community service.
And follow up, what's the need for this bill then?
Chair Przanski, Senator Whitsitt, I believe that the language was left over from Senate Bill 1145 when the Department of Corrections did operate most of the field services offices. And thus, when they created this bill in 1995, and that was a reference to deleting that was the intent in deleting the reference to the Department of Corrections when Senate Bill 1145 went into effect and all these services moved to the local level.
All right, Mark, to stay there for a second. I just want to check the date as to when that was last statute was last revised, because I believe that's correct. I mean, basically what happens now in these type of charges, unless it was a felony that would put the person into the Department of Corrections for service, they're going to be at the community correction level, and so they would be under the current county probation office, and this does look like it was antiquated and just hasn't been wasn't caught until now, which is somewhat surprising that we've gone this long without having this addressed, because it basically this kind of puts the quagmire of putting the defendant under the control of the DOC when they are already under the control for supervision purposes from the court, from the community corrections. Does that
That's correct, Chair Pozinski.
All right. And this one here. Yeah. ORS 137.131 was enacted in 1995, which would have been when the SB 1145 went through, if I remember correctly. I think that was one of those tied in with SB 1 and all the other major modifications that we did. So basically what the court would then be able to do, or what would happen, is that the person would still be under the control if they were sentenced as a misdemeanor to the county, and the court would have the ability to revoke their probation or hold them in contempt.
That's correct, Chair Pozinski.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 2321? Not seeing anyone, we'll close the public hearing. We'll go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 2321.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2321 to the floor with a due pass.
All right, Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2321 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. The chair will carry this one. And we'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2323.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2323 increases the value threshold of certain property crimes and eliminates the lower value threshold for theft by receiving. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. I'm going to ask Gil Meyer and Paul Snyder if you both would come up together. And Gail, you can go ahead and get started since it appears to be a bill from the defense lawyers.
Thank you, Chair Pozinski and members of the committee. Good morning. I'm Gail Meyer, legislative representative for the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. House Bill 2323 is rather targeted and simple. It does one thing. It modifies the value threshold of different property crime offenses. Property crimes are divided by their classification of seriousness based on the value of the property involved in the crime. So this would pick up theft by receiving, theft of services, criminal mischief, and fraudulent use of a credit card. Those divisions identify the differences between the A, B, and C misdemeanors and the B and C felonies. In some instances, the threshold dollar figures have not been adjusted in years and in some instances for decades. And so we've worked with the District Attorney's Association from last year to incorporate certain provisions that they would be agreeable to, so I'm pleased to announce here that the Oregon District Attorney's Association actually supports the bill as well. I think you now have my chart, which hopefully gives you an idea of the adjustments. And in almost all instances, it's above the adjusted inflation rate, and in some, it's just a little bit below. In terms of fiscal impact, I would observe that some crimes that potentially would have been characterized as felonies now might be considered misdemeanors, so there would be perhaps cost savings there, but as my colleague to the left of me will point out, there's a certain cost shift in terms of supervision from some felonies now over to the county. But we do urge the committee to support the bill. We think it's timely, and again, there's no opposition from the District Attorney's Association. They support it.
Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties, and we have no position on House Bill 2323. As my colleague to my right pointed out, there is a potential cost shift from the state to the counties in terms of misdemeanor supervision and in terms of possible incarceration in county jails and so forth. We did check, however, with our colleagues, sheriffs, and with community corrections directors very briefly, asked for impact analyses, and in an exchange with a couple of sheriffs at least, they indicated not much. And so our sense is that it's logical that this kind of adjustment should be made after all these years because of the change of inflation, and we have no position on the bill.
Thank you. Senator Wissett.
Snyder, I guess what I struggle with a little bit is that an individual who decides to steal something or to accept stolen property makes that same decision, whether it's a $5 bill or whether it's a $5,000 bill. And so I'm not certain why we should be altering the charges as a result of the amount, because the same choice is required.
Mr. Chair, Senator Witt said that's a policy choice for the Legislative Assembly to make, but my sense is that it was made at one point with respect to each of these provisions, and at the time that it was made, it was based on a number that has changed in some cases substantially since the time of that decision.
Any other questions? All right, thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 2323? Not seeing anyone, we'll close the public hearing. I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 2323, and we'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, move HB 2323 to the floor with a due pass.
All right, Senator Barquest moves House Bill 2323 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Wissett, I'm going to give you your choice if you want to carry. If you don't want to carry this one, 2323, the last one, which was 2321, I'll let you choose which of the two you'd like to carry.
Okay.
All right, Senator Wissett will be our carrier on 2323. And the last public hearing we have scheduled for today is for House Bill 2357. Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2357 clarifies the rules for distributing property when a rightful heir refuses receipt or disclaims the property when a person dies without a will. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. Jeff Moore.
Chair Posonski, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Moore. I'm a state planning attorney representing the executive committee of the State Planning and Administration Section of the Oregon State Bar. House Bill 2357 is in essence a technical correction to a uniform act that Oregon adopted in 2001. But subsequent to that, the Commission of Uniform Law Council had suggested some changes and some clarifications after these bills had been, acts had been passed across the states, and recommended that all states enact those changes. Oregon has not yet done this, and this would be that effort. In essence, what this bill does is, and let me backstep just a little bit to explain what a disclaimer is. If somebody disclaims, it's in essence a legal no thank you of property passing to that person if they were to inherit it. Now, under the current act, the law says that if there's an instrument, such as a will or something of that nature, then the property will pass according to the terms of that instrument. But what the act does not address is what if the person died without a will, for example, intestate succession. And this bill clarifies that if they were to die without a will, then the property would pass in a similar manner as other default laws under the current Oregon law. In essence, it would pass to the descendants of the disclaimant by representation. In addition, there's also a further clarification that says that in the event that the disclaimer would result in the property passing to the estate of the disclaimant, again, there's no will or instrument otherwise stating where it will pass, then there's another default law that states if it passes to the estate, it will pass again to the descendants of that disclaimant.
Of that estate?
Yes. So if the disclaimant says no thank you, instead of passing to the estate, it would pass to their descendants. And one of the reasons this is important is because, say for example that an individual bequests property to another individual, but subject to somebody else to have the life estate in that property for a period of time. Well, the individual who's to receive that property down the road, perhaps they say, you know, I really don't want that. I would want that ultimately to pass to my kids. So they disclaim. The problem then comes, however, is that if that individual disclaims
it later may pass to that person's estate. They personally didn't accept it, but when that life estate individual passes away, it would pass to the estate of the disclaimant, even if they were alive. Well, the problem with that is that now it's part of their estate, and that means that it may be subject to estate tax within their estate, even if they had not even accepted the property.
Even though they disclaim it, it's still going to be tagged to them. So this bill is going to, let's say, clarify that it would not go into that estate for tax purposes?
Correct. I mean, in essence, it trickles down through their descendants. Now, if they don't have any descendants, then it would go back to the individual who owned the property, and it would pass according to their intestate succession.
Okay. All right. Questions? Mr. Moore, I think you did a wonderful job. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there any other question, or excuse me, is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 2357? Not seeing anyone. We'll close the public hearing. We'll open the work session on 2357.
Mr. Chair, move HB 2357 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2357 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered, and believe it or not, Senator Bonamici, number five in the order.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to carry it.
Thank you very much. And that will take care of our work session on 2357. And, Council, do we have anything else we need to cover today?
That's it, Mr. Chair.
All right, folks, you got an extra hour here. We're adjourned.